Hey, this is John Hartshaw, and welcome to episode 3 of Keep On Groovin'. After the death of Jimi Hendrix, albums began to hit the market at an astonishing rate. The first group, which included a lot of material Jimmy was working on for his next album, as well as a live album, were very successful. Could they possibly keep up this rate of releases and maintain the quality? Episode 3, The Mike Jeffrey Era, The End, 1972 to 1974. Mike Jeffrey was certainly a controversial figure in his handling of Jimmy's posthumous life, and he wouldn't be the last. There was a lot of talk toward the end of his life that Jimmy wanted to change management, but he never did for whatever reason. So Jimmy passes away, and Jeffrey has all the stuff he can use to help pay off the studio debt, among other things. The three albums he put out in the first year and a half after Jimmy died were pretty solid hits on both sides of the Atlantic. The two cinematic ventures, however, didn't do too well. The success of films like Monterey Pop, Woodstock, and Gimme Shelter may have made it look like you could throw just about anything to the public and they'll bite. But Jimmy Plays Berkeley and Rainbow Bridge show that's just not the case. So what does Jeffrey do? Right, begin work on another movie and another album. While directors Joe Boyd, John Head, and soon-to-be Saturday Night Live Gary Weiss were off putting together the movie, Jeffrey had Eddie Kramer and John Jansen put together a third studio album, this time without Mitch Mitchell. Things were a little harder as most of the really good stuff had already been used. There were a small number of tracks from the Electric Lady sessions that were close to finished. There were also the remaining B-sides from the UK singles that were unreleased on a Hendrix album in the US, 51st Anniversary, Highway Child, and The Stars That Play with Laughing Sam's Dice. 51st Anniversary had been the B-side to Purple Haze in England and Hey Joe in the States. It was on smash hits overseas, but still wasn't on an album in the US. And the next album wouldn't correct that mistake. I believe Eddie Kramer has said at one point the song was just overlooked for the LP. So they cobbled together a group of experience and post-experience songs, set it up, and prepared it for release, and then guess what happened? Yep, Mike Jeffrey came in and pulled Laughing Sam's Dice off to save for the next album, a move that would backfire spectacularly, but one he didn't get to see. Eddie and John went back into the tape library and found, well, a couple of things to use. One was a song, the other was a time filler, and something that would not set such a great precedent going forward, but it became War Heroes. The album opened with Bleeding Heart, an Elmore James song used in the movie Rainbow Bridge, but didn't make it onto the soundtrack. After he performed the song at Royal Albert Hall, Jimmy recorded it in the studio a number of times. He did a couple in the spring of 1969, one a fast-paced version, the other one a slow, dirgy rendition with Buddy Miles. He returned to a more traditional blues approach when it was done at the first Band of Gypsies show. When he started recording again after the Band of Gypsies album was done, he did a version with Buddy Cox and another drummer, though Mitch would later come in and dub his drums over top of the original take. With its production style, it might have made the track listing for the next album, but it seems Jimmy never did any mixing work on it at Electric Lady. Highway Child was the B-side to Wind Cries Mary in England and made their version of smash hits, but it was left off the U.S. version along with the, as previously mentioned, 51st Anniversary and Laughing Sam's Dice. This was recorded right towards the end of the Are You Experienced sessions, mixed quickly and put out as the B-side. They released it originally as a mono mix, but later did a stereo one for the 2000 box set with a couple of extra seconds tacked on to the end. There's a note from Jimmy in June of 1970 at Electric Lady to get the Highway Child tape. Now, was he going to use it for something? We'll never know, unfortunately. Next up is Tax Free, the song by those Swedish cats Hansen and Carlson. He first recorded it around the same time as All Along the Watchtower in January 1968 at Olympic, and it became a semi-regular part of his shows until the experience broke up a year and a half later, with notable versions at Winterland and the LA Forum. This version had some overdub work done in May 1968 at the record plant, and further work was done after Jimmy died with an overdub drum part from Mitch. Seems that Mitch was pretty busy in 1971 with the drum overdubs. Now, the studio version is interesting with Jimmy's use of a Leslie speaker on his guitar, giving it a cool warbling sound. If In the West had been a double album, the LA version would have been a really solid addition to the record. Now, as far as the studio version goes, it's a great song, but
I can kind of see why this didn't fit on Electric Ladyland, and Jimmy ended up using Come On, recorded very late in the sessions, as kind of the last track on the album. Now, with the song Peter Gunn Catastrophe, the sound that you hear is the beginning of the bottom of the barrel being scraped. It's, you know, fun to hear him play a little Peter Gunn and then Jimmy doing his own take of the Frankie Lane song Tragedy, which he renamed Catastrophe. But there was so much yet to be released. You know, this was the best it could come up with. You know, I'll list a bunch of ideas later when we're done going on the album. But I'm sorry, there really wasn't any excuse for this when there was so much left to use. The side ends with Stepping Stone, the first of the two songs Jeffrey pulled off Rainbow Bridge to save for this album, even though he didn't know it was going to be this album at the time. Stepping Stone is another one of those evolving tunes. It started at around the time of Woodstock, even showing up in the Voodoo Child ending jam. He did some work on it through the end of the year 1969, first as Trying to Be, then Sky Blues Today. To cleanly paraphrase Leonard Chess, there's nothing about Sky Blues in this song. Google Sonny Boy Williamson's Little Village for the reference. Supposedly, it's about his arrest in Toronto for drug possession, but I don't know. There's nothing about it in the song itself. Anyway, eventually during the Band of Gypsies sessions, he settled on Stepping Stone as the title. He cut it a couple times, both with a somewhat frenetic drum part from Buddy. Oddly enough, right around the same time Capitol was releasing the Band of Gypsies album, Reprise put out a Band of Gypsies single of their own with Stepping Stone on the A side. It's a little unclear if the single was then pulled or just flat out didn't sell. When Jimmy got to Electric Lady, he overdubbed some more guitar parts, and at some point, overdubber-in-chief Mitch Mitchell put a new drum part on. It's different, but it's not clear this part works any better than Buddy's earlier one. Side two begins with a wicked-sounding instrumental recorded in early April 1969 at Olmsted Studios in New York called Midnight. He took two passes at songs using the main riff, one called Trash Man, the other Midnight. And it's not like they're part one and part two. These are two completely different songs that use the same riff. In any case, Jimmy never really went back to this material, so Eddie and John took the tape, cut around 3 minutes out of the full 8.5 minute take, mixed down a second guitar, which you can still hear at times, and put out some cool phasing effects. There's a video of Steve Vai doing a cover of this where he calls it War Heroes. So if you want to think of it as a title track, well, it's an instrumental. Call it what you want. Looking at its length, I guess Three Little Bears was the song that was specifically meant to replace the one that was pulled off and moved to the next album. It's a little better than Peter Gunn in that it's a complete song with vocals and all. Jimmy had actually done a demo of this a couple of months before, and it was recorded right around the same time he did the tax-free overdubs during the Electric Ladyland sessions. If that song didn't fit on the two LP set, this one really didn't fit. Yeah, it's about Three Little Bears, but not necessarily those Three Little Bears. It's full of nonsense lyrics, and again, under other circumstances, it'd be fun to have. Even more fun is the bootleg version, where Jimmy mixes in a few choice four-letter words, and I don't mean bear. The bootleg version also continues well past the song's ending to show the beginning of a jam that would later become South Saturn Delta. So if it was presented in that context, it'd be a lot better to put out as a release, but back then, nobody would have wanted a 10-minute jam like that, so I guess they did what they could. The next track, Beginning, was another instance on this album of a song that had been previously released, but in a different form. It's a studio rendition of Jam Back at the House from Woodstock. The Gypsy Sons and Rainbows band cut their own studio version soon after the concert, but it sort of still remains unreleased. This one was recording during the ultra-productive July 1st, 1970 sessions that included Dolly Dagger, Paley Gap, and Hey Baby. Jimmy and Eddie did a mix on August 22nd. I'm not sure if it was this one or a longer version on a bootleg where someone, you know, I'm looking at you, Juma, was whacking a wooden temple block through the song like a metronome. kind of annoying. Or maybe they mixed a different version that's exactly as long, but thankfully is missing that. It is a song that could use a bit of paring down, and this version does have it just about right. The other odd thing about this one is the songwriting credits. When it was on Woodstock 2 and later Woodstock releases, it was credited to Jimi Hendrix. But this version and another one that came out later were credited to Mitch Mitchell. You know, payback for his help on the previous albums? Maybe. I just don't know. Isabella, the last song on the album, has its own long and complicated history. The name Isabella first popped up on a song recorded at TGG Studios in October 1968, but it doesn't really bear any resemblance to this song. In this form, it first emerged in whole at Woodstock and ended up on the Woodstock 2 album. Gypsy Sons and Rainbows later cut a number of versions in the studio, with Larry Lee on second guitar, giving them their own distinct sound. But unlike Beginning, aka Jam Back at the House, this song did make an earlier appearance on record. It was, in fact, the B-side to Stepping Stone, the single that disappeared without much of a trace. It does seem strange that in February 1970, Jimmy was mixing and fixing a studio set of Band of Gypsy songs in one place and the live album in another. And both Isabella and Stepping Stone, as I mentioned earlier, did get additional work at Electric Lady later on in the summer of 1970. In this case, the solo was definitely different on the single compared to the one that appears here. But the drums sound exactly the same, even though they're credited to Mitch Mitchell. In fact, to this day, they're still credited to Mitch, even though it's clearly the same drum track on the Band of Gypsy single, which is Buddy. The last verse mentions the rays of the rising sun, so I have to imagine this would have played a part in the two album set if it was going to be First Rays of the New Rising Sun. Incidentally, for those playing at home, I prefer the single version of Stepping Stone and the War Heroes mix of Isabella, just so you'd like to know. War Heroes did not do as well as its predecessors, missing the top 20 in the UK and barely making the top 50 in the United States. Part of it had to be a little buyer fatigue. There had only been three albums in barely the year since Jimmy had died. And as I mentioned several times, the material just wasn't as strong. It must be saying something when Kramer and Jansen absolutely had to put out an album. All they could do was come up with around 36 minutes worth of stuff. So what else did they have to choose from? Right off the bat, I have four choices, three of which I can understand why they were passed over, complete as they were. The studio versions of Message of Love and Power of Soul had been mixed during the Marathon August 22nd session. If they were somewhat desperate for complete tracks, that could have been some place to go. Maybe they were still under the thinking, well, it's out on Band of Gypsies, no need for the studio version. That line of thinking would only last a few years longer. Mitch dubbed the early 1968 version of Somewhere in 1971, but he seemed to have a few timing issues with it, so maybe they listened to it and thought, let's not for right now. Again, this would only last until 1975. The other one they could have put out was Taking Care of No Business, a track from around the time of Mr. Bad Luck in May 1967. It's a little silly, but not as downright goofy as Three Little Bears. Like Mr. Bad Luck, Jimmy was doing it in 1966 in the Village. And to show they may have been thinking about putting it on the album, the song shows up in a Jimi Hendrix guitar book with a copyright date of 1972. Now, I bought my copy of the book in 1989 or so, and Taking Care of No Business wasn't even out there on bootlegs. And so I don't know why they didn't use it. So if the album had been released with something like this track listing, side one being Bleeding Heart, Highway Child, Tax Free, The Stars That Played with Laughing Sam's Dice, and Stepping Stone, then side two being Midnight, Three Little Bears, 51st Anniversary, Beginning, and Isabella, it certainly would have been a better album. Not as solid as Cry of Love or Rainbow Bridge, but better. You leave Stars That Played with Laughing Sam's Dice on in place of Peter Gunn. Pulling it off was a big mistake that I'll get to with the next studio album. You add 51st Anniversary into the middle of side two, and you have two 20-minute sides. Plus, it has a purpose. It collects the leftover First Rays tracks, save for the two that'll be in the next studio album that I'll get to, as well as the remaining B-sides, so it's sort of a companion album to smash hits Cry of Love and Rainbow Bridge. Why did they call it War Heroes anyway? If Sky Blues has nothing to do with Stepping Stone, this title doesn't have much to do with the contents except for Isabella, which maybe is where it came from, but it's kind of a stretch. A few years back, we were discussing the album over on the Steve Hoffman boards, and one of the posters, Slain, came up with his own idea to improve the album that revolved around using the live version of Machine Gun that partially appeared in Jimmy Plays Berkeley to give the album title, War Heroes, some meaning. That version is also of interest since it contains a verse that Jimmy didn't do in the Band of Gypsies version. So Slane's idea was to make it the real final studio album, cleaning up the remaining tracks meant for First Rays. Like I said, there's two tracks that were recorded in 1970 that may have appeared on First Rays that are going to show up on the album, which I'll get to. So with that as an inspiration, I came up with a little different idea. If Mike Jeffrey was insistent on making another studio album, move the B-sides off completely, and make this album a sort of reprise version of Band of Gypsies. You go ahead and you use the studio versions of Message of Love and Power of Soul, the single versions of Stepping Stone and Isabella, and the Berkeley Machine Gun. I also thought of it as a dark mirror version of Rainbow Bridge, so I used that same template, 5 songs on side 1, 3 songs on side 2, with a long live song in the middle. Plus, in keeping with the tradition of Cry of Love and Rainbow Bridge, it includes one song from the Experience era. Now, I wish Mitch had done a better job with Somewhere. I would have loved to include it since it's an earlier version of Earth Blues. Oddly enough, the first version of Somewhere on drums is Buddy Miles, but we'll get to that later on. So I left on Midnight, aka War Heroes. I also would have liked to switch Bleeding Heart and the Star-Spangled Banner from Rainbow Bridge around, but I restrained myself one alternate world at a time. So my version looks like this. Side 1, Message of Love, War Heroes, aka Midnight, Bleeding Heart, Beginning, and Stepping Stone. Then Side 2, Power of Soul, Machine Gun Live from Berkeley, and Isabella. I guess it would have been sticking a finger into the eye of capital to do something like this, but having, you know, put it together and listen to it, it's really good. Now, all that said, I would still like to have the original album and its original mix reissued on CD like they did with Cry of Love and Rainbow Bridge, with Bernie Grundman's wonderful mastering work, and maybe 51st Century Toss in as a bonus, but I'm not expecting that, but I'll take what I can get. Poor selling album notwithstanding, Mike Jeffrey tried to get Kramer and Jansen to work on yet another studio album. This time, Eddie walked away, having just done some work with Led Zeppelin. He'd soon have more down the line, helping engineer Kiss's breakthrough Alive album. So it was up to Jansen alone to work on that while the documentary was still making its way towards completion. Then something happened to further muddy the waters Jimmy's back catalog had become. Mike Jeffrey was killed in a plane crash over Spain. At least that's what they say. There was some in his inner circle that thought he actually had faked his death and was off somewhere living on Jimmy's earnings. But since he hasn't been seen at all since 1973, I'm going to go with he unfortunately died in the plane crash. Soundtrack to a film about Jimi Hendrix. For a little while, things were on sort of autopilot. First up would be the movie. The directors were able to get some interesting interviews out of Pete Townsend, but when does he not give an interesting interview? And an unfortunately semi-strung out Eric Clapton during his heroin period between Layla and 461 Ocean Boulevard. They also had interviews with old friends Fane Prigeon, God rest her soul, she just passed recently, and the Allen, or Aleem if you prefer, brothers. Billy and Buddy got a few lines each, Mitch got a little segment, and Noel didn't appear at all. I think they wouldn't pay him. It was something like that. Lou Reed has a great bit about all the business stuff Jimmy was dealing with and how an artist really doesn't need that S word. The star of Rainbow Bridge, Pat Hartley, gets a whole lot of time, yet I'm not sure how well she really knew Jimmy, but Pat, if you're out there, drop us a line. We'd love to hear from you. And speaking of stars, there was also Little Richard. Now, as far as the performances go, you had Rock Me Baby, Wild Thing, Hey Joe, and Like a Rolling Stone from Monterey.
Wild Thing was the only one that had been seen on film up to that point in the Monterey Pop film. Rock Me Baby and Rolling Stone were, of course, on the Monterey side. And Hey Joe makes its debut on this album. But why not Killing Floor? Anyway, Johnny B. Goode and Purple Haze came from Jimmy Plays Berkeley, though Haze was intercut with a version from German TV from 1967. The Star Spangled Banner, of course, was the one from Woodstock, but the film had it from a different camera angle, so it was interesting in that respect. Red House and In From the Storm towards the end of the film also came from Isle of Wight. And finally, there was the acoustic Hear My Train coming from the short film Seen My Music Talking, but it's now more closely associated with this film thanks to using the image of Jimmy from this segment on the poster and on the album cover. Now, if you take all these songs and put them on the soundtrack album, what do you have? On side one, Rock Me Baby and Wild Thing had already been released. Isle of Wight Machine Gun had not. That one's also incomplete. We wouldn't get the full version until 2002, all 22 minutes worth. On side two, Johnny B. Goode and Like a Rolling Stone had been previously released. Purple Haze from Berkeley and Hey Joe from Monterey had not. On side three, Star Spangled Banner and Machine Gun were previously released. Hear My Train A-Comin' was new. And then on side four, Red House from Isle of Wight was new, and In From the Storm was previously released, but only in Europe. And this one is actually edited. It's missing the drum solo at the beginning. It just cuts right in with the brief little intro from Mitch right before Jimmy comes in. So there was about a half hour of new music interspersed with around 35 minutes of previously released material and a bunch of interview segments that don't make for good party music. On one level, it was going outside of the box to provide some interesting archive material for fans interested in things like this. On the other hand, for the general public, it wasn't what they were looking for in a Jimi Hendrix album. The album barely made it onto the charts in the top 100 and gave a bout of cold feet to the executives at Reprise regarding another Hendrix album, just at the wrong time for the next record to come down the pipeline.
Loose Ends. John Jansen continued working through 1973 to put together another studio album. He had one track set aside already to use. He could have used 51st Anniversary, but again, for some reason, it didn't enter into the picture. He had Somewhere and maybe No Business available, but didn't use those either. He considered the February mix of Power of Soul, and that brings up something that may have been the reason for a lot of these strange choices at this point, which I'll get to after talking about the album. So Mike Jeffrey pulled a newly mixed stereo version of Laughing Sam's Dice off of War Heroes to be the centerpiece of this new album. A song never released in the U.S. except on an obscure Warner Brothers Lost Leader album. Now, after his death, the album was put together and sent over to Reprise, who promptly passed on the album. They'd just been burnt by a Hendrix album that contained better material than this did. They weren't going to take a chance again. Polydor over in Europe, however, did accept and release it. The producer's name had changed to one Alex Trevor. Who was Alex Trevor? Well, easy. John Jansen just picked another name and put it on a cover there. Apparently, he wasn't enthralled by the final results either. It hit stores in February 1974 with a really appealing blank brown cover, except for some pictures of Jimmy from mid-1968 during the Electric Ladyland sessions. The French cover was a bit more colorful. Jimmy is a dove with colored wings shooting a cannon of sorts out of his leg. I don't know where they came up with that idea. The German cover was a drawn version of a photo from the Cry of Love album. That's the one I have. A decade later, it was re-released in England as the Jimi Hendrix album. You know, really imaginative choice there. It shows that the name Loose Ends had a taint to it, but really was the album all that bad? The album starts off with Come Down Hard on Me, a song Jimmy began working on at the record plant in early 1970, then developed more at Electric Lady Studios. It mentions Lover Band, so it might be sort of an offshoot of that song. It's kind of a funky number. It probably would have fit well into the Band of Gypsies catalog. In fact, parts of this were in a song the Band of Gypsies jammed on called Honeybed right before the concerts. Some fans also hear it as an evolution of the arrangement that Jimmy had done for Bleeding Heart right in early 1970 as well. Jimmy did a mix of this on August 22nd. He was really busy that day. But the version on Loose Ends is a blend of two different takes. There are some slight changes in effects, but musically they basically sound the same, so why not use the mixed one? Now, one of the first signs of the desperation John Jansen must have had is that they're releasing a cover version of Blue Suede Shoes a couple years after releasing the last cover version of Blue Suede Shoes. This one comes from the last recording sessions for Band of Gypsies on January 23rd, 1970. Happy birthday, Mom. Thing is, over half of the track is Jimmy trying to teach Buddy exactly how he wants the drums to sound. No. Just cymbal and snare, cymbal and snare. Once again, for some fans, this is great, getting a chance to hear Jimmy in the studio having fun. You're playing it at a party, not so much. When they finally kick into the song, it goes around 2 minutes before fading out. Having heard extended version of the session on bootlegs, they could have let it run for another minute or so, but then it breaks down and starts all over again, so they would have had to cut it there. Now, this one's kind of interesting. Jam 292 from May 1969 has Jimmy, Billy, Mitch, and piano player Sharon Lane jamming on a distinctly jazzy number, which may have been inspired by an old Duke Ellington song. The coolest part is about a minute in, Jimmy gets his guitar sounding like a trumpet, really wild stuff. The version here fades in about a minute or so into the track. They released the full version on the Really Essential Dagger CD, Hear My Music, and I have to ask, why was this faded in? It's got a really neat and distinctive opening. It would have been cool. I get fading it down at the end when it just kind of stops, but I really don't see the need for the fade in. Next is The Stars That Play With Laughing Sam's Dice. Here's the song the whole album is based around, and it isn't even new. At the time the album was released, it was over 6 years old. It was recorded at Mayfair Studios in New York, in part to test out Jimmy's newly acquired wah-wah pedal, something he also tried with Curtis Knight and Ed Chopin, leading credence to Chopin's contention that Jimmy was still under contract, but that's for later. The song was put out as the B-side to Burning the Midnight Lamp over the summer of 1967 in the UK. The title is supposedly a play on two psychedelics, STP and LSD. The version here is the one Eddie Kramer got ready for War Heroes. The original B-side was mono, this was in stereo, and the two mixes are very different, highlighting different parts of the song. If you like wild guitar, try the mono. If you want to hear Jimmy's lyrics a little better, try the stereo. I have to think it was in the back of Mike Jeffrey's mind that he could use the fact this song would be widely available the first time in the U.S. as some kind of selling point, but it wasn't. Mike should have left well enough alone. Had he lived, maybe Jimmy would have made a career of putting out at least one Dylan cover on the rest of his albums. Watchtower was a huge success, and Like a Rolling Stone made the Monterey album. Drifter's Escape is the final song on side one of Dylan's John Wesley Harding album, the same one with All on the Watchtower. Supposedly, Jimmy originally wanted to do the third song on side one, I Dreamed I Saw St. Augustine. His buddy Eric Clapton would get to do it 46 years later. By doing Watchtower and Drifters, was Jimmy going to do every other song in the album before he got to St. Augustine? Anyway, the song starts off with a cool bass riff from Billy, and then the guitar army is unleashed. Jimmy did a lot of overdubs and a number of mixes on this, one of which is on South Saturn Delta. The mix here is one John Jansen specifically did for the album, and truth be told, I like it better than a lot of the other mixes I've heard. Every artist has a vision in their heads about how their work should be presented. Maybe this was one of the reasons Jimmy did a lot of takes. He always thought he could do better. Eventually, he'd be satisfied he'd gotten what he'd heard in his head, down on tape. But every now and then, there was a song that he just couldn't quite get down right. Valleys of Neptune is a great example of this. He started working on it at Olympic in 1969. He wanted the Woodstock band to do it, but they couldn't even approach getting it down. Through 1970, he kept working on it, but never got the music and the lyrics to come together properly. Eddie fixed that in 2010, thanks to digital wizardry, with mixed results. We'll get to that when we talk about the Valleys of Neptune album. Another song that Jimmy just couldn't quite get down was Burning Desire. During the Band of Gypsies era, November 1969 through January 1970, he tried a number of times to get the song down on tape. It was a long, multi-part song with different tempos running 8 or 9 minutes. There are at least two good studio instrumental takes of this, but no vocals. They also did the song 3 times during their concerts. The ones during the first set each night were complete, but but the one during the second show on New Year's Eve came apart and ended in less than 3 minutes. To prepare for the concerts, after they were done recording at the record plant, they went to another studio called Baggies to specifically rehearse the songs they intended to do in concert. They kept a two-track tape running, I guess, for them to go back and take a listen and see how they did. But it came in useful here because it captured one of the only times a full set of lyrics was done. It made one memo of the songs to work on for the next album, though it really doesn't look like he did anything with it at Electric Lady. If Jimmy had known he wouldn't get a chance to do a really good version of this in the studio, would he have opted to go ahead and put it on the Banjo Gypsies album? Apart from it being kind of low fidelity, this one's also missing the slow, pulsing opening almost all the other versions have. There's at least one more version from Baggies out there with the opening. It's a little quicker and not quite as good overall. Right after they finished with Burning Desire, Buddy suggested, "We better stop." But Jimmy kicked into a cover of the Muddy Waters classic Hoochie Coochie Man. He'd done the song before on Alexis Corner's radio show on the BBC in October 1967. The same show where he also did a couple of rarities, Dylan's Can You Please Crawl Out Your Window and the R&B workout from his Curtis Knight days driving south. This one was certainly more fun. When he gets to the line about the gypsy woman, he breaks into either Mom's Mabley or Flip Wilson's Geraldine, I'm not sure which. It's a fully 6 minute workout and the guys sound like they're having fun. Now the album ends with a little track of Jimmy and Eddie in the studio. You know, Eddie cries out, "What's it called, Jimmy?" "Electric Ladyland." It was creating a demo for what would become the title track of that album. It's a quiet solo guitar number that runs a little over a minute and a half. Now, this may be the same recording as a bootleg that also has Buddy on drums playing a really loud kit. If so, it was a good idea to just have Jimmy. It's sort of like Belly Button Window, a very quiet way for Jimmy to, unfortunately, say goodbye. So what happened here? We had two songs, possibly from the next album, a cleaned-up B-side, and a bunch of jams. Was this the best they could have done? There was one possible mitigating factor. In the days after Jimmy's passing, a lot of tapes and other recordings disappeared. WABC in New York filmed some of the Electric Ladyland sessions, including the night they did Voodoo Child. To this day, I don't think anyone has ever seen that film. The multi-tracks to Band of Gypsies went missing for 25 years, or at least nobody saw them for 25 years. As late as the mid-80s, tapes from Olympic Studios were possibly almost thrown away. Chaz said he had them all safe. So nothing to be worried about. Loose Ends is not an unlistenable album. 1974 had Metal Machine Music for that. It's just not the best that was there, even taking into account there were a lot of missing tapes. What would I have done? To be honest, I probably would have thought about doing Smash Hits 2 or something like that, for the US at least. There weren't any actual hits. But this could have used up the two B-sides, the original Stepping Stone and Isabella, and a song or two from the two posthumous LPs, maybe even tossed in Voodoo Child and Little Wing. They could have even added Message of Love and Power of Soul, put it out as a single, and on the album. One other conclusion could have been to leave all the B-sides on War Heroes, add Drifter's Escape and Come Down Hard on Me, and just call it a day. But that's with the benefit of hindsight, seeing that those were the only two 1970 songs left out there. To this day, Loose Ends has never been issued in the United States, and at this point, I could see three possibilities. One is a straight-up Bernie Grumman mastered reissue. Another is to take side one and the minute and a half of Electric Ladyland and add them onto a War Heroes reissue, since there's already an album for the Baggy Sessions and Burning Desire and Hoochie Coochie Man are on there, so they're taken care of. Or you could go ahead and turn it into Jimmy's version of the expanded Odds and Sods. Take as many other stray things as you can find and add it to the album, arrange it chronologically, and make a big deal out of it. First U.S. release, 2 LP set. It would have been nice to maybe put all 4 B-sides in stereo mixes to kick off the album. However, unfortunately, it doesn't look like the tapes exist for Stone Free or 51st Anniversary to make that a possibility. So a little less than 4 years after Jimi Hendrix's death, it looks like his legacy would have to remain in the albums that were already out. Little did anyone know, the story was just beginning. Next time, Alan Douglas re-enters the picture and shapes the Hendrix catalog for the next 2 decades.
That's next time on Keep On Groovin'. This episode is dedicated to my buddy Darren, who just had a birthday this past week. Without him, I'd never have started listening to Hendrix and thereby wouldn't be doing this podcast. I'll go into the story of how he got me listening to Jimmy in one of the episodes when we get to talking about the late 80s. Thanks for the suggestion, buddy. I'm John Hartjar. Thanks for listening.